So without further ado, we are ready now for Brexit through the HR lens. I'm going to pass over to my colleague, Mark Dyer, who's going to take us through the detailed slides and run through some of the issues, some of the challenges, and hopefully some of the solutions that we need to be mindful of as we run through the coming weeks and months. So Mark, over to you.
Thank you, Adam. Well, it's an interesting topic to cover, given sort of the run-up to Brexit and beyond, and some of the ambiguity that still exists, given the fact that we are due to leave the European Union on the 31st of January. So I think the reason why we've not seen much of Boris in the last couple of weeks is because I think he's locked behind closed doors working through the detail. So this presentation, whilst we are in an area of ambiguity, what we're trying to do is give you some practical tips and hints around the things that we think are going to impact the HR lens. So just to run through the things that we will cover off, some facts around the current position as we know them, some understanding of how Brexit may impact HR, how you as an organisation and as the HR or the business leads for your organisation can become more Brexit resilient, and some tips that you can prepare in readiness. So let's move on to an area which has sometimes been bereft in the Brexit debate, some areas around facts. So at the moment, there is around 2.27 million workers from EU nationals working. So a large part of the workforce is made up of people from the European Union. The employment rate for nationals has grown year on year, and there's probably 50% more people move to the UK than leave. So we're very much a sort of a trend upwards around people wanting to come to work for in the UK than leave. And work remains still one of the main reasons for EU citizens moving to the UK. And so you can see that, you know, our business economy and our workforce is really, really quite dependent on those skills and numbers that the EU nationals do bring across. And obviously that will start to change from the 31st of January onwards. We also look at the legislation that the HR runs within as well. And there is a whole host of regulations and acts that actually are currently in force into the UK. As you can see, 12,000 regulations and 186 acts. Now, the government has a plan around how it's going to deal with that as part of its Brexit exit strategy. And most of it is set out in the white paper, which actually looks at three distinct things it's going to do. First of all, it's going to repeal the European Communities Act and then bring the power back into the UK institutions. And in doing so, will convert all of the EU law as it stands into UK law. So in essence, what we're saying here is that in the first year, not much is going to change within the employment law space, with the exception of some changes that will need to be made where the current EU law reflects the EU infrastructure. For example, where the legislation may look at things like the European Court of Human Rights, actually we would have to look at creating a similar body within the UK legislative framework to deal with that type of requirement. So for the first year, there's going to be quite a lot of work around just converting that into the UK statute book. So having said that, there are some areas of where we may find there is some initial focus. So as we said before, it's Parliament's decision from the 31st of January around the whole UK legislation, and part of the major drive around the vote to leave the European Union is to have some more control. It's within the government's gift to do that. However, at the moment, you know, there's a lot of sort of dialogue, rhetoric, whatever you want to say, around what the new laws are going to look like. And prior to the election, certainly the Labour government was very much around looking at it from the employee perspective, where you could argue that the Tory government and the government now will be looking at it from the employer. However, because we are in a process of dialogue, discussion and negotiation, it's more likely that any future trade deals with the European Union will be dependent on the commitment for the UK government to uphold the current set of employment legislation and at the worst, some non-regression of the employment law as it stands. And recent research from the CIPD, who's gone out to businesses, are backing that view as well. So it's really incumbent on the government to make sure that it reflects not just the business need, but also our European Union partners as we move through into a world outside of the European Union. Having said that, though, you know, there are some areas where the government, as a result of lobbying, potentially may need to look at. So some of the areas are things like the time off and limits on working hours. So this is the 48-hour week. If we're looking at previously the amount of people that are working in the UK that are EU nationals, businesses may say it needs more flexibility to be able to resource to its business requirement, and maybe the working time directive may be something that the government may need to look at as a result of the changing recruitment market. Another one similar to that is the agency worker protections, which is around the equal treatment of a worker being in employment for continuous for 12 weeks, regardless of the contract length. Again, flexibility in the workforce. There may be some lobbying around having a look at maybe some changes around that, and very, you know, for companies that are reliant on a sort of a transient workforce, the agencies may be something that you need to be aware of. Annual leave. So this is the accruing of annual leave for people on long-term sick. Again, a cost thing to businesses. There may be some pressure to be put for government to look at that. As a result of, you know, the change, companies may look to become more efficient, and you may get more acquisitions and mergers. And a result of that, the 2P regulation, so this is the Transfer of Undertaking Protection of Employment legislation, may look to be a little bit more controlled/relaxed to ensure that companies can assimilate to each other quicker than they potentially can do at the moment. And again, really to help the efficiency in businesses delivering to its customer base. And in here as well, health and safety. You know, businesses hold their health and safety of their employees at heart, but there is an argument to say that there is a lot of red tape that's wrapped up in the in bureaucracy around health and safety, and the government may need to take a look at that as a result of the transfer. There's some others as well that, whilst potentially not looking at the changes in detail around these are the sort of some of the principles, and there may well be a desire for government to relax some of the red tape and bureaucracy around things like the equal pay, so gender pay reporting, you know, the requirement for to report that may get relaxed or pushed out or amended in some way. Same with some of the maternity rights and the anti-discrimination laws, which at the moment is currently uncapped. I think it would be it'd be quite dangerous for government to make wholesale changes in here, but potentially may see some of the bureaucracy being removed as a result of the exit from the European Union. So it's not an exhaustive list, but this is things that, you know, from a business perspective, you know, you may want to keep an eye out, especially the areas around the resourcing piece, which is going to be quite critical as we move after the 31st of January and onwards. Okay, so 31st of January is our date of leaving the EU. As I said earlier, you know, there's not going to be too much change until we get to January of next year. So for people wanting to come across and work in the UK up until the 31st of December of this year, actually it will continue as it is at the moment without needing a visa. However, from the 1st of January 2021, unless people have been already resident and have got a pre-settled or settled agreement, they're going to have to apply for a temporary leave to remain visa under the new immigration system for them to be able to stay within the UK after that date. So, and there's a little bit of detail to be working in on that. And that's the devil, as they always say, is in the detail, and hopefully will come out as part of the government's directive as and when they get round to publishing. So, workers wishing to come into the UK for work. At the moment, as I say, there is free movement, but actually what government are saying is they're going to look at the current points-based system and do some amendments to that. The main things are around the tier two, which is the general category which non-EU workers need to come in on. So first thing they will be doing is looking at removing of the permit cap. Currently, there's 20,700 applicants allowed to come through this in a year. Obviously, given the fact that this will now apply to the EU nationals, it's going to be extended, as well as including the medium, as well as the highly skilled workers. So the definition of the people that can come through on tier two is going to be broadened as well. The salary threshold of 30,000 will still remain, and something for you to be thinking about, and we'll mention this later on in the webinar as well, is there is a charge of £1,000 per worker to bring people in through the tier two visa process. So anybody that's involved in resourcing needs to be thinking about that in their costings. As well as the third change that they're looking to make is around, at the moment, you have to domestically advertise the role for 28 days before you can offer it to a foreign worker. They're going to be looking at removing that and widening out the occupations that will fit within the tier two. So we've been working with quite a few governing bodies who are saying, you know, we need to have some of these core skills that we need included in this in this occupation grouping. So if you do have any representative bodies that you're a member of and you can identify some key roles within your sector that you need, it's worthwhile flagging those up so government are aware that they can include stuff in there. And I think in the HR space, HR advisors are now being brought into it, but HR administrators aren't. So it's on a role by role basis. So very important that if you do have those, make sure that you know, that you can flag those up to your governing bodies, as I say. So if you have workers already working in the UK, and I'm talking about workers and their families, if they are already working in the UK and have been by 2020 for a continued period of 5 years, they can apply to remain indefinitely, which is called the settled status. So it's a case of taking that worker through the process to ensure that they have the legal right to remain. If you have workers and their families that have been less than 5 years by 2020, then they have to go for a pre-settled status to allow them to accrue the amount of years to qualify for a full settled status. So I'm just making the point here that, you know, this is about not just the worker, but the family as well. So you may have a UK citizen married to an EU national, and therefore, if they have been married and brought, you know, recently, potentially you may have an issue with the fact that their partner or whoever cannot stay in the UK because they don't have the amount of accrued years. Okay, So let's look at our current HR practices then, and what we can do by way of looking at protecting your business from Brexit. So let's look at the right to work check. So this is the requirement to make sure that whoever you employ has the right to work in the UK. Up until the 31st of December 2020, it really is as is. So your current checks around passport and ID will continue to be okay. However, there is a point to note here that you may recruit somebody on and around the November time who would need to be over the 3 month period. What this then does, it cuts across from the 2020 to the 2021 threshold, which means that they will need to apply for this temporary leave to remain. Now, legislation and practice at the moment hasn't yet defined exactly what that looks like. So any of you that are recruiting and have a forecasted recruitment pipeline, just be mindful of the fact that you may be starting to look at visas, the November side of the Christmas break rather than the January side. So point to watch. Also, be clear that and keep an eye on government communications around documentation, because actually whilst the government are saying at the moment this is what's needed, as the detail gets flashed out around immigration, changes may be made around what exactly you need to be checking as an employer. And then from the 31st of January, then the passports, etc. Sorry, 1st of January, thank you, Adam. 1st of January 2021, the passports are no longer a valid proof of right to work. It will be the pre-settled or settled temporary leave to remain visas as a part of that right to work check. Currently, though, what the government is also saying is it won't be incumbent on the employer to do any retrospective checks on any existing EU workers. Now, I think this will change as government says, well, hang on a second, we have a bit of a period here where we may have a risk of people coming through with the wrong documentation. So again, my watch for you is to just make sure that you're up to date with the requirements around checking right to work, and say it is a moving feast at the moment, and the devil, as I say, is always in the detail on these things. So if what you're doing if you have workers that you already have working in the EU, and what does that mean by way of the first of February and beyond? Well, does your indemnity insurance actually cover the liability for people working in the EU country? So it's worth just going through your insurances to make sure that you've got that covered. The earning money part is actually, do you need to tell HMRC that actually they are working in an EU country for that period of time, as it may affect tax payments and entitlements. If you are sending them to EU as well, on this other side of taxes, social security contributions, do they need to be paid both in the UK and EU? And these may need to be factored into any costings that you may need to be making if you're bidding for work or you are doing a costing around sending somebody across to the EU. Professional qualifications. So, if your role requires specific qualifications for you to be able to discharge that duty, are they valid? Will it be recognised by the European countries and for the UK? So it's worth a check to make sure that, the qualifications that you're employing somebody on is a valid piece of and still recognised. Driving. So, we're all carrying our European driving licenses at the moment. Will we need to have a relevant local driving license? At the moment, as I say, we're in this transition period, but that's not to say that, when the details worked out, that there may well be changes to our requirements around driving licenses. So again, not a lot of detail out there at the moment, but something worth bearing in mind if you are bringing people across to the into the EU countries or bringing someone from the EU into the UK. And lastly, which may have a more immediate impact, is things like entry requirements. So what you don't want is to be sending your workers across to the European Union only to find they're stuck at the departure gate because they haven't got the right documentation to travel. So it's really worth checking that, you know, what is the documentation that your workers need to have by way of visas, etc., before they set off. Okay, so again, as I said, very much ambiguity, but there are some things that, you know, as a business we can all do right now. So we're going to give you a few tips. I'm sure there's others you can be thinking about, and if you have any and you want to share, please do, because you know, it's that we're here to help, and obviously you're here to help others on the call as well. So I think the first one is around this diversity inclusion. You know, I think we've seen some increased intolerance around you know, the social media, and the rhetoric has been ramped up over the last sort of years as we've moved through to Brexit. You know, and these people who it's aimed at, either directly or indirectly, do start to feel that they're not as welcome in the UK as they undoubtedly would have been. You know, so you know, As an organisation, as a company, and you really want to make sure that you just make sure that they feel valued. And sometimes communication is a key thing here. You know, so you know, they're going to be worried about what's happening. You know, are they going to be able to stay? Do they have family that, you know, that they're worried about? You know, for you to be able to give them as much information that you can around how you as a business are looking at supporting your workers through the change will be absolutely key and core in making sure that they feel supported and have someone to come to if they have any problems. So really, just, I'm sure everybody's doing it, but you just make sure that, you know, everybody within your workforce is felt valued and has been communicated to. Having said that, you know, people have their own, you know, have the right to make their own decisions. So, you know, I suppose the question to ask yourself and your businesses and clients is, you know, are you at risk of losing workers? So, you know, have you got EU nationals there who are feeling, you know, that they are, you know, that they're at risk of wanting to go back to the native country? And again, point to point out here is it's not just the individual worker, but actually it's their families as well. And I said earlier, if they're married to a EU national, that may have an impact on their decisions as well. So really important that you understand who actually are potentially affected by our move out of the European Union. So again, identifying who those staff are is really important. And then from that, actually what you can then do is do an impact analysis. So actually, do they sit in core roles? Do they have core skills? Are they finance generating, unique skills, et cetera, et cetera? So knowing that right now gives you an opportunity to understand the impact of that Brexit may have on your direct/indirect workforce. So once you understand, okay, who those people are, actually look at the skills. So are you going to have a skills deficit as a result of Brexit? Are there key people that you're going to lose as a result of our exit? Can you grow your own? Now, is there homegrown talent out there? And if so, where are they? Are they within your organisation at the moment? If so, what do you need to do to bring them up to that level? What's the timescales, et cetera, et cetera? So really understanding, not only from an individual perspective, who's going to potentially be going as a result or leaving as a result of Brexit, but what skills you're going to end up being at a loss for, and how you're actually going to be able to bridge that gap. And I think the really key here is to plan in advance. So actually, if you do know what those are, get a plan in place now. You know, it's even if it's just a contingency, knowing what you know now is going to stand you in good stead. And also understand the timescales. So actually, if you have somebody that needs a professional qualification as a result of a role that you're potentially going to lose, you may need to be doing something now to bridge that gap. So post December, January 2021, you're in a position to say we've mitigated or we've reduced that risk. Because actually, if you start to do it in January, when potentially that person leaves, you're in a far worse place than you would be if you were to do it now. As we said at the beginning of the presentation, you know, over 2 million European workers in our economy generating revenue, that pool potentially will shrink as a result of Brexit. So the question for your businesses, are you fishing in the same pond for the same people as everybody else? And if so, you know, what is that pond and how you're going to manage? One of the things you can look at is, well, what's going to make you different? Because actually you may find that because if there's a skill shortage, the employee may say, I've got a choice now to make where before I didn't. What's going to make you stand out from your competitors? You know, what is your employee value proposition? You know, do you offer employee benefits? And we have an employee benefits portal called Benefits Cloud that you may want to look at to say, actually, we can provide you with some great money off discounts as a result of this platform. Do you have family-friendly policies? Anything that you can do that sets you apart from competitors now will stand you in good stead when actually you are starting to dip your rod into that same pool. And again, plan. So what lead time are you going to need to be able to define your need and do that recruitment? Not only just around time scale, but think about the costs as well. So there's going to be a longer process to bring EU nationals across if that's what you're doing because of the visa process. And as I said earlier, look at the cost of the visa as well. That needs to be factored into any of your decisions that you make as a result of your recruitment plan. So another thing to look at is, if you've got your existing employment terms and conditions, your policies and processes, you know, do you need to have a look at those to see whether you're actually making reference to this specific EU law? And as I said earlier in this webinar, you know, there will be some changes, albeit around the mechanism to manage and administer the new employment legislation. You may need to make sure that your policies and processes reflect that change. Also think about any enforceability of contractual protections that you may have. So for instance, you may have some specific contractual provisions in your policies, terms and conditions that are specific to the European country that you may be operating in or have workers in. Will they still be enforceable as a result of us moving out of the European Union after January? So again, a really good opportunity just to go through and work out, you know, where that impact is. If it doesn't do anything, it may well just give you a sense of, right, we need to keep an eye on this particular piece of legislation, and if the government do announce any changes, you can go and have a look at it and say, yes, it does impact us or it doesn't. So it just helps you sort of see some of the wood from the trees from quite a lot, I should expect, of information that's going to be coming out from government over the coming weeks and months. Having said all that, what I don't want you to do is to go around and say, right, I've got all these EU nationals now, we need to do something about them, I'm going to serve them notice, because that's not going to be right. You know, they are still covered under the current employment legislation and law, and we don't want any discrimination claims arising as a result of people being identified through their nationality. So I think the watch here is just to stay up to date with any of the changes that are going to come out as a result of the government working through at the high level and then bringing through the detailed changes and the specifics. And I go back to the thing I keep saying, the devil's always in the detail. At the moment, we are struggling for some detail in some of these areas, and it's government's duty to give us that clarity. But unfortunately, with case law, sometimes someone has to do something wrong before everybody learns from it. So people on this call, don't be the first person to make that mistake and end up having the first case against you. So again, just keep an eye on what's going on from government, and there's some decent websites out there that give you that clarity. And lastly, I think, you know, I don't think we're at the end of the ride. I don't think we're probably just sat on the roller coaster at the moment, and we're at that point where we're going to suddenly jettison off around the first loop. So I think Brexit is a bit of a roller coaster ride. It has been. It's only just starting. So I think hold on tight, enjoy the ride as much as you can, keep informed, and really just keep an eye on the stuff that's coming out from government, because it will be an ongoing and evolving piece of change and legislation. So that's me finished. So I hope we've answered most of the questions, but if we have any questions that have come through, I'm happy to take them, Adam.
Yeah, so we've actually got a question through from Chris. Thanks for the question, Chris. Chris's question mark is Brexit as bad news for HR as the media is telling us? Are we facing a doomsday scenario?
Yes, good question, Chris. I think don't read everything that we hear in the news as fact. I think there is some good news that will come out of Brexit as well as bad. I think as I said, there isn't going to be too much change within the first year, because obviously government will be looking at the detail as it goes through its exit process. So I think it's a difficult question to answer. Personally, I think it's going to be a very, very slow evolving process. And, you know, there will debate around the differences as and when it comes through. So I think, you know, the thing to do there is, I keep saying, is just to make sure that you're up to date with everything that's going on and coming out of central government, because that's going to inform how businesses look and operate.
So this is Mark, a question of taking a common sense approach. Don't get too worried by all the hype that's in the media, but equally don't ignore it. Base your decisions on fact and take a balanced and structured and sensible approach as we navigate all the changes that are coming our way.
I think you're right. And I think, you know, there's going to be stuff around tariffs, there's going to be stuff around trading. And from an HR perspective, what we want to do is to understand where our potential risks are. Hence us saying in the tips is start to understand where your potential risks are. And then what you can then do is tune into the things that are important to you, because there will be a lot of stuff coming out there that will be nice to know. What you need to know is, what is it going to do and how is it going to impact me personally as a business?
And I think that leads us quite nicely on to the next question that's come in from Adam. So another Adam on the call, which is, does this impact both small and larger businesses?
I think the answer is yes, certainly in different ways. I mean, I think from a large business, it's more of a scalable thing. So if actually you have a large workforce, you know, the risk of having more impact in by way of the way of numbers is yes. But then on the flip side, larger businesses are sometimes more capable of coping, because they have, you know, HR departments, they have SMEs that they can call on to be able to understand and make the decisions relevant to that particular business. Small businesses, mind you, are going to end up with the ability to be a little bit more agile potentially compromised, because actually they're going to have increased costs if they need to bring in a particular skill set. You know, it's going to cost them more money and actually impinge on their lead time. So I think it's going to be different types of issues for different types of businesses. But actually, I think, you know, for the nature of Brexit, it will cut across all businesses, large or small.
Okay, that's certainly sound advice. So we haven't got any further questions that have been raised at this point. So I think that brings me to the point, Mark, of saying thank you very much indeed for sharing your thoughts. Thank you for a really well-informed and thoughtful presentation. As we said to everybody when we were sending out the details, you will all receive a full detailed handout and also a recording of the webinar, so you get to listen to us all over again, which will be good. In the email that you'll receive when we send that out, there will be a link where we'll be asking you for some feedback on the webinar as well. That's going to be a really quick 2-minute Survey Monkey. So if I could encourage you to let us know what you think and where we might be able to improve. That would be absolutely fantastic. And it would also be great if you could let us know if there are any further topics that you're interested in for future webinars. We are intending to make this a regular feature of the calendar, and we would love to be able to put on a whole series of webinars that are reaching the topics and subjects that you're interested in. So the more feedback, the better. And finally, please do follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. So please do follow us, search Pertorum. Keep up to date with the conversation and join in the dialogue. That would be absolutely fantastic. Mine and Mark's contact details are on the screen now, so you can get in touch with us directly if you would like to. So thank you very, very much. It's been a real pleasure hosting you this afternoon on this webinar, and please do enjoy the rest of your afternoons. Thank you very much and goodbye.